Hello, and welcome back for another affiliate-focused branch of the UF Care Podcast, conversations with early career professionals studying addiction research here at the University of Florida, as well as providing advice and support for those entering the field. My name is Victor. I'm a second-year graduate student here in the Department of Clinical Health Psychology, working with Dr. Jeffrey Boisenow, and today we're joined by John. Hey, John.
Hi.
John is a graduate student here at the University of Florida in the Department of Health Education and Behavior. He's been awarded the Early Career Investigators Travel Award at the 2020 College on Problems of Drug Dependence annual meeting for his work on co-use of e-cigarettes and other substances among U.S. young adults. Although I suppose it was a virtual meeting ultimately, John.
Yeah, it was virtual. And it was travel award.
Mm-hmm. And you also received, I saw on your CV, a local award. You got PhD Student of the Year in your department.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Thanks. It was my honor to receive the award. I mean, I could not make it without many support from my mentors and my friends and colleagues. So it was very honor to receive the award.
I'm sure you earned it, and I'd like to talk with you a bit more about what went into that, but thank you for joining us today. I got some questions for you. We're going to talk about your career a little bit, where you've been and where you're going. We'll talk about your dissertation and that process, and then ask if you have any advice for other early career professionals or others interested in getting started. So just to begin, Mr. John Lee, could you tell us a little bit about yourself? How did you find yourself at the University of Florida?
So first of all, my name is John Lee, and I'm ABD, fifth year PhD candidate in the Health Education and Behavior Department, and I'm closely working with Dr. Jiwon Chong from CARE, and my research focuses on statistical methodology in tobacco use. Particularly tobacco use and cessation pattern among adolescents and individuals with cancer and substance use disorder. And I'm originally from South Korea, and I've been here in Florida as a Gator for the past 5 years.
How did you find out about the University of Florida? I saw you did undergrad in South Korea.
So it was kind of interesting. So it's kind of like a long story. So when I graduated from undergrad from business school in South Korea, I got a job in the marketing strategy team in the beer company. So you may probably know like Budweiser and then Stella Artois. So I used to work there.
Go for it.
And it was fun, and I learned a lot, but it just didn't get along with my life philosophy or life ethic, if I may say. Like, I want make people better themselves, not put them at risk of unhealthy behavior. Mm-hmm. So I quit and I moved to United States to pursue my advanced degree. And then I heard that University of Florida has really good, very established resources and then research environment, especially for addiction and substance use. So that's why I chose to come here.
That's quite a change from working with those companies to coming to grad school to study addiction. Was that a difficult change for you?
I mean, culturally, yes, maybe yes, because I never been to United States before that, but it was okay. It was pretty smooth transition from South Korea to United States. And working wise, actually, it kind of helped to understand the marketing practice by tobacco industry. Like, I mean, I used to work in alcohol company, but it's, you know, pretty similar what they're doing. So yeah, it's kind of understanding like what kind of strategy or what kind of tactics they are using for making people use their product. So I would say it was not that difficult, but it's still, I'm still learning. I'm still getting adjust myself to the United States.
Right. Well,
in a research setting.
Aren't we all in many ways, John?
Yeah, exactly. Don't we all?
Right. So can you tell us a little bit more about the research that you're doing now? So you started with these companies selling alcohol, and now you're doing tobacco cessation research?
Mm-hmm. So more of like prevention research. So one of my, I'm mostly working with population-based data sets from CDC or NIH. So to examine the changes in prevalence of tobacco use pattern or cessation pattern among the population that I mentioned. So, for example, one of my research is to see the changes in vaping marijuana among adolescents across 5 years. And yeah, recently I'm getting more focused on tobacco regulatory science, which is trying to address FDA's research priority, like tobacco marketing. So another study is to examine how exposure to e-cig advertisement or use of flavored tobacco products are associated with e-cig use by adolescents.
Looking at this in adults specifically, because I know there's a lot of marketing done mm-hmm. towards vaping and things for
adult popular
kids mm-hmm. too.
Yeah, so whole generation. But for me, I'm intrigued by youth tobacco research because most of established smokers, adult cigarette smokers, reported approximately like 90% reported that they started their cigarette smoking by age of 18. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the point. The youth somewhere before 18 is the point you can prevent to use tobacco products. Like if after age of 25, there are not many people started use tobacco.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, I'm kind of intrigued by use tobacco research or young adult population.
Right. Looking into those habits as they're forming, because it's easier to prevent
exactly.
a habit from forming at the beginning than to try and stop it once it's been established.
Yeah, at the first stage.
Right, right. So what are some of the findings that you've had so far? Is there certain techniques that you've been using or identified to determine how to prevent those habits from forming?
So you mean the prevention strategy technique or mm-hmm. or statistical technique? Actually, I'm not interventionist I'm not really familiar with any prevention strategies, but what I learned is there are some evidence-based prevention strategy like counter-marketing, like a warning label on tobacco product or TV campaign, like a tobacco prevention campaign via online or TV and with the education. So there are some like evidence-based prevention techniques. I'm still learning about it.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Is there anything else about your research that you'd like to share today?
Sure. Maybe I can share my dissertation.
Yeah, please.
So I'm working closely with my amazing mentor, Dr. Jiwon Chang, and she's quantitative methodology, especially in substance use in a different developmental phase.
Mm-hmm.
So in my dissertation, I'm gonna use some sort of statistical technique called latent growth curve modeling, to examine if exposure to e-cigarette advertisement is associated with increase of e-cigarette use among adolescents. And we just want to see this association was mediated by risk perception. In other words, when adolescents were exposed to e-cigarette advertisement, their risk perception, e-cigarette is less harmful, e-cigarette is not that dangerous to use, And in turn, it leads to e-cigarette use by adolescents. But one thing unique about my dissertation is we want to see this association by different developmental phase. So in adolescent, there is early adolescent, mid adolescent, and then the late adolescent, right? So their behavior pattern is particularly in substance use is very different from early adolescent and then late adolescent. In other words, like a middle school student or high school student. So we want to test those associations in the framework of different developmental phase.
How do you test that? Do you look at where companies are already marketing and then find the population in those areas?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So we have a data set. We have a national data set to examine like a longitudinally. So like it's a longitudinal panel data set. So as you probably know, they started with a cohort in wave one, like 2013. And they tested 2014, 2015, and 16, right? Like every year, mm-hmm. which means their grade level is increased like one by one each year. So we tested, we reformatted the data set by grade level. So we want to see how their exposure to e-cigarette risk perception and e-cigarette use by different grade level.
That's really cool. So you're looking at these kids as they grow up and as far back as the early 2010s and see how their habits have changed.
How they change. Exactly.
And you're able to see the level of exposure to these advertisements, and you're able to assess their risk perception over time?
Yes. So I don't want to use any jargon or something, but so we can estimate their slope of their percentage by years, like across the years. So, for example, from sixth grade to eighth grade, their slope is not steep, but from ninth grade to 12th grade, probably their growth is more like steeper. Mm. Like in that, steeper. So we can test how their slope, like statistically different from this period and that period. And then that latent growth curve modeling, you can do that. You can test the differences.
So you're expecting to see I guess that would be an increase in e-cig use based on their exposure to the advertising, and that would be adjusted, it would be mediated by their risk perception over time.
Exactly. That's what I expect to see.
Excellent. Well, I look forward to reading your dissertation once it's all ready and done and seeing what we can learn about these habits.
Thanks.
What sort of aspects of this gets you most excited about future directions? Like, where would you like to take this research in the future?
So my future direction, right?
Mm-hmm.
So one thing I'm really excited about my research is my research may have public health implication, which is addressed to tobacco control policy. So I think that's what I want to do for my future career. Like, I want to be an expert in tobacco regulatory science in the United States, and more broadly and ambitiously, I want to contribute to global tobacco control policy. I think that's what my research is bringing to for future career.
Mm-hmm. Tobacco control and regulation in order to prevent those habits and improve the health of the population.
Improve health.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what usually goes into this research? Like, what are the strengths or skills that are required to look into tobacco regulatory research?
well, that's a good question. What what kind of skills we require for this. Basically, understanding the tobacco control, like in a federal level or state level, is required. I'm still learning. I'm still very confused because, you know, tobacco control policy changed a lot of, like, changed a lot. So it's really hard to follow up. So, and by state, like, for example, the state law in California is definitely different from state law in Florida. Mm-hmm. So you have to keep an eye on what's going on out there and what's going on in changes. And another thing you have to have is keep an eye on about the new thing in the society. So, for example, in 2019, there was heated tobacco, IQOS. For example, IQOS from Philip Morris International was approved to be sold in the U.S. commercial market. So you have to keep an eye on what kind of new tobacco product will be released and how they work and what kind of tobacco control policy to prevent the use of this kind of product. So it's really important to, all in all, it's really important to keep an eye on out there, not just like not in the classroom, not on your desk.
Right. Look at what's coming down the pipeline.
Exactly.
You mentioned a new thing. You said an ICO or an icon?
IQOS.
IQOS? Could you? Mm-hmm. I'm not familiar with that. Could you tell us mm-hmm. a little bit?
So that's a new tobacco product. That's a new tobacco product. So it was introduced in 1980s at the first time as a harm reduction tobacco product, but it failed in the market. And in early 2010 or something. So it's basically combustible. It's not combustible tobacco product. So their another name is a heated, not burn tobacco, HNB product. Mm-hmm. So they're heated tobacco leaf, but not burn, not combustible. So that's why they argue their product is less harmful than cigarette or any other types of combustible. So the thing is, FDA designated this product reduced harm exposure product, which is they can market themselves as a, oh, we have a less toxicant. Oh, we have a less chemical. So maybe yes, maybe no, it's still debatable, but for use, it's just not okay for use to start any types of tobacco product. So that's why we have to look at this type of like new tobacco product. Mm-hmm. A lot of research is still going on, so we don't know many things about it yet, but I'm working on it, so.
Can't wait to hear what you find, John.
Yeah, stay tuned. Mm-hmm.
John, that's all the questions that I have for you today, except for one last one that I want to let you answer, which is, do you have any words or advice for others who are interested in getting into this kind of research in the future?
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm not the best person to give advice because I'm still making lots of trials and error and I'm still learning. But if I had to give advice to younger myself or someone who just started their research career, I've been there. I always told my undergrad RAs that do not be afraid of numbers too much. I know statistics sounds very fancy and difficult, but actually numbers are everywhere and every day. So for example, like on the internet, in the news, on the television, everyone's talk about like percentage, everyone's talk about like probability, everyone's talk about graph. So numbers are everywhere, not like you can see and learn only in the classroom, right? So, and numbers can give you very definitive evidence for toward the problem. So what I want to say is do not too much be afraid of numbers and try to get along with them. And it will give you more solid evidence and background for your result or what of you on your research question.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much, John. Thank you for joining us. We also want to give a thanks to the University of Florida Center for Addiction Research and Education, as well as Dr. Oliver Grundman, Dr. Sarah Jo Nixon, Dr. Joanne Paris, and all of our mentors and future collaborators. Thank you very much, and catch you later.
Thank you.